Jim Brewer is one of the most recognizable comedians in the business, known for his stage antics, dead-on impressions, and hilarious stand-up. In 1995, he joined the cast of Saturday Night Live, where he quickly became a fan favorite for his many original characters, including Goat Boy and his dead-on impressions of actor Joe Pesci. Jim Brewer will be at the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield, Massachusetts on Thursday, June 6th. He is one of our favorite guests on this program, and it's a delight to have him back on the program. Thank you very much for being with us, sir.
Morning, brother. How are you?
I'm doing fine. What's new in the world of Jim Brewer?
New comedy special coming out June 7th, a new tour, and I'm excited because people's finally catching on. That Brewer, although you, whatever you may think of me live, I'm pretty much an edgy, non-swearing family comedian that just destroys on stage. I would say I'm Cosby with a Metallica shirt.
There you go.
It's that simple. It's just funny because a lot of people, you know, they say, oh, he's in half bed, he's the Goat Boy, and I'm always surprised that people show up and they're like, oh, that was the greatest stand-up, and you weren't filthy. Like, nah, I've been like this for years. But
people
are starting to catch up to it.
I think I've seen you perform, I don't know, four or five times. And
really?
Yeah. And I love watching you work because there is an energy and a style on that stage that is like none other. Because you do feel, you know, there's a little bit of nuts.
Passion.
Okay, I'll strike the word nuts and I'll replace it with passion. And
nuts is kind of no focus, shocking. That's what I think. Nuts.
Yeah,
nuts,
well, that's true.
Shocking, nuts, no direction. I have a pretty pinpoint direction. I would call it passionate. I would say I'm the comedian version of a Springsteen. Every time people go see Springsteen, they're like, you just feel it from beginning to end. That's how I describe myself.
So when you get out there, is it you're instantly comfortable or you have to be made comfortable?
I make myself comfortable. So I feel out every single crowd. I don't know what I'm walking out to. Sometimes the crowd's a little more conservative. So I go into, I can walk into any living room my entire lifetime and make myself at home. I take audiences the same exact way, but I never change whatever I'm going to do and try to appease them. I just still get across what I need to get across, but on their terms.
You are, as you mentioned, and I think this is interesting to note, and I just want to ask you about this. For you, was it a conscious decision to work cleaner?
Yes.
And why, and what led to that decision?
Well, there was the first thing, an obvious thing for me was my kids. And the respect of my kids and families around me and their kids and other families. There was a moment where, you know, I was living in this town, my kids were small, and I was out to dinner, and then this woman said to me, oh, I see that you're playing the Performing Arts Center in town. I would love to come see you, but you're really blue, right? And I was really offended by that. I said, what do you mean I'm blue? She goes, well, like, you're filthy, right? Like, you talk about drugs and stuff. I said, where do you get your information? Have you ever seen me? No. Then why? What makes you think that?
Yeah.
She's like, well, you look high in that movie. I'm like, that was a movie. So if Brad Pitt shows up to town, do you think the 12 Monkeys guy is showing up? Do you think the Fight Club guy? Like, what? But then I realized that's a lot of people's mentality. They don't... You know, they go see, so I knew right from there, like, I don't want people thinking this. So, and the internet is huge. I started looking up some of my bits, and some of my bits are, I never talk about filth or anything dark. Maybe in the past I would curse more, And then I realized, I don't need the curse words. I can just find a joke instead of going, isn't that crazy or what the F? And isn't it, what the F? And if I got to end everything with that or just, I challenged myself. And I don't think I've ever been stronger in my life. And I'll challenge any comic out there toe to toe. You know, I don't care if they're on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine or whatever. I think pound for pound, I'll knock out anyone.
So when you are coming up with new material, and there are no limitations because of that, you can still talk about whatever you want to talk about. I mean, you get very personal. You talk about your family. You talk about your life.
Sure.
You talk about what's going on. So there's no limitation to that.
No. I just keep it. I try to keep it as. I take it where everyone in the room, I take it with my view of things. So if I have a view, I always try to put whatever my subliminal message is to it. You know, recently I've been talking about, you know, Boston and the bombings and the gun laws and all this, and it's still, I love when people go, oh, I don't like this subject. But they end up, it's a view you haven't heard. It's a funny, clever, smart way to go about it. And I still stick to what I'm doing. But most of it's still family. It's all family stuff that everyone can relate to.
Yeah. I was just listening to Bill Hader, who just left Saturday Night Live. He was on...
Were you listening to him on Stern?
Yeah, he was on Stern yesterday.
Yeah.
Talking about that experience. And and here was a guy who didn't have a stand-up background and got involved in the show, but was obviously a big fan growing up. How did you get into it? More specifically, Saturday Night Live, was that something that you wanted in your career?
No, that was never on my radar. Which I know the Saturday Night Live people, I think, have griped that I've put that out there. But
yeah,
it's just honest. It was one of those things where when they first asked me to audition, I didn't want to because it was a bad funk there. I was leaving the worst cast. Nothing against the cast, but it was considered one of the worst cast in history, and the talent on there was unreal. You had Sarah Silverman and Jay Moore, and I think Robert Downey Jr. I mean, you just had an amazing freaking cast, but it just wasn't going anywhere. So I didn't want anything to do with that. I was a stand-up comedian. I was making some noise as a stand-up comic. I had a development deal with NBC, and NBC asked me if I'd audition, and I passed. I said, no, I don't want to. I'd rather develop my own show. And at the time, I was developing something kind of similar to King of Queens. It was my wife and I. We just got married. We were living in an upstairs attic of someone's house. It was pretty much... And then I finally auditioned, and then, you know, a couple auditions later and meetings, I got it for that year. So it's something where I didn't go, gosh, I hope my whole life I get there. That wasn't even on my radar.
So once you have that on the resume, does it?
It's a great tattoo. Get you into restaurants that are overbooked.
and not just for that year, but for many years later. I mean, you're part of the club.
Yeah, you're part of an elite club. And if you made a name for yourself, it's even better as an elite. It's the one thing that I can get to say is like, wow, I made my mark there. I may not be in the best of all the time. I may not be in their personal little SNL elite club, but I know when people go, oh, he was the goat boy. Oh, he was Joe Pesci. There's just those two stick out, and that's making your mark. I hit the home run, and I got the highlight reel.
And the actual work and being there and in that, was that something that you would you have continued on with that?
I would have stayed there forever.
Yeah.
I would stay there now if I had to.
Yeah.
But just like any job, this is how I describe it. When I was hired, the people that hired me loved me. They were fans of me. And then about a year and a half into my tenure, going on my second year, my club left, and then the new regime took over, and the new regime wasn't a fan. So they did everything they can to not make my life happy. So I don't care if you work at Sears or radio or whatever. When the new regime comes in, they want their people, and I wasn't part of that. I wasn't part of their people.
I mentioned
so it made my life miserable, and it's sad. I also was young. I wish it didn't end that way. It was a mutual quit / let go, but I was peaking. I was still growing. It wasn't like I wasn't a popular cast member at the time. That's the part that was a little sad about it.
Yeah. Yeah, people missed you when you were gone.
Yeah, which was cool. I liked hearing that.
Yeah. When, and again, because Bill Hader mentioned this the other day, and I thought it was interesting about impressions, and that's something that Saturday Night Live likes, and what is expected of you in to have characters and to be able to do that. So obviously Pesci was something that you were very good at. Did you go in with that, or did you create that there?
No, I had that. I my first TV show was called the Uptown Comedy Club, filmed in Harlem in the early 90s. It was a syndicated, it was like the first hip-hop comedy show, and I was obviously one of the white guys on it. And that is the first time I put Pesci on TV. So 91 was the first. I was already doing Pesci, and that's the only real impression I could do. I wasn't an impressionist. I just loved Joe Pesci, and I loved Jack Nicholson. I didn't do Nicholson because everyone and their mother did and still does Nicholson, so yeah. I thought it was kind of, as they say, hacky to do him. But Pesci was the only one. I that's why I thought I wouldn't get that a lot, because I couldn't do impressions.
You a couple of years ago, I was listening to Howard Stern, and you were on as Pesci for the entire show.
He asked me to do it
for hours.
Yeah, it was like 3-4 hours, and he asked me if I would be willing to do that. I said, "Yeah, for you, for the show, for Howard Stern show, whatever you need me to do."
So you never broke out of it, except for the end of the news. And what is it like to? So is it easier when you're you're fully encapsulated, like, we're going to do this for the whole time?
Yeah, I got to say, it was a freaking blast. It was easy. It was easier than I thought. The only thing is, like, my voice started hurting.
Yeah.
But besides that, I tell you what, it was one of the most fun things I ever did ever.
Because I remember driving to going to work with my wife in the car, and we keep on looking at each other going, is it Brewer or is it Pesci? Like, we didn't know.
That's great.
We didn't know. And now we assumed, but we didn't know. And I thought, well, that's great. And I assume that's ultimately what both you and the show wanted.
That's exactly what we wanted. And people still talk about that day, which is pretty awesome.
So when you, you're still talking about your home, you're still talking about what's going on, and those are the subjects that you explore on stage.
I hit my stand-up, I hit family, I do the things I know, family, teenage girls, one little girl, married 20 years, elderly parents, one's 86, one's 90, a dysfunctional, alcoholic-driven family. I will never run out of material the rest of my life. And then I take some topics that everyone's into and I put my spin on them. So it's a... And I come out to play. I don't come out and just collect a check. As you said, I come out... If I got an hour and a half of my time and your time, let's make the best of it. I am competitive. When I come out there, I want you, and I'm confident that when an audience member comes and sees Jim Brewer do stand-up, they're going to leave going, I've never seen a better stand-up show live ever. And, yeah. I strive for that, and again, I have no problem saying that.
How's your dad? You talk a lot about
he's
your
great.
Dad on stage. And,
he's great. We got a nurse that helps out. He's 90. He's dementia. He doesn't really, he knows who I am, but he's starting to not remember much of anything. He remembers the war. I'll say, Dad, I'm going to San Francisco. And I was shipped out of San Francisco in 1943. And he'll remember, Dad, there was a horrible, horrible tornado in Oklahoma. That's why I had boot camp. Hey, Dad, do you remember Mom? Oh, Mom?
Yeah.
You know, so he doesn't, he remembers the war, certain dates, but, you know, he's 90. And still with you. Blessed he's still around, but
yeah.
I don't know how much longer I got him.
Yeah. And you make that, yeah, and you make the most of that and hold on to whatever you have. That's
great. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to. It's part of life. What are you going to do?
Absolutely. Jim Brewer is going to be at the Colonial Theater on Thursday night, June 6th, and it's a great night, and I can't wait. It's always a blast.
I can't wait
to see
either.
It. Really a lot of fun. So all new stuff. You're going to be doing new material, and then you get the new show coming out. So.
That's right, man. I can't wait you guys come see me. I appreciate your help. And we'll see you then.
Jim, you're the best. Thank you very much.
Thank you, brother.
Again, Jim Brewer, Thursday night at the Colonial Theater, June 6th. And you can find out more information by going to BerkshireTheaterGroup.com. BerkshireTheaterGroup.com. Jim Brewer, Thursday night, June 6th, BerkshireTheaterGroup.com at the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. You are listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.